fellow baseballers, and a big warm welcome to our first postseason 2024 World Series podcast of the Johnny and Josh Show. Great pleasure to have your company. Even greater pleasure to welcome JC midweek. This is unheard of, JC. Have you got a day off?
No, I'm taking a little hooky. I hope none of my colleagues are watching this. Just a few minutes off. I will make up the time, I promise, to each and every person in the state of Colorado. But, you know, this postseason has been so fantastic that if we didn't sort of sneak in a quick 20-minute pod, we would not be doing baseball justice.
Absolutely, buddy. And indicative of the fact that it's midweek, we have got no David. God knows where David is. Completely AWOL somewhere in New York City, presumably drowning his sorrows as a result of the Mets not being in the World Series. I've got to be honest with you, buddy. I thought the Mets might do it at one stage.
Absolutely. And I went back to look at, you know, I did the broadcasting for TNT when the Mets were in London for the London series. And I looked back, I had a great clip where after the second game where the Mets had pulled out that really dramatic victory, I said, I'm still shaking. And I suggested that it might be an inflection point to turn that team around. And I honestly, you know, we talk about grimace, but I really believe that London series was the starting point of what turned this into a really special season for the Mets, even though they didn't make the World Series.
Am I right in saying since that London series, they were the best team in Major League Baseball? I'm sure I heard that somewhere.
They were fantastic, and it really turned it around. And that game was so electric, the way that game ended with that swinging bunt, the bat exploding, touching home plate, getting the double play. I believe it really did turn things around.
It's such lore. I was there on game one, which was pretty dull by comparison. I missed out on all the excitement. Mind you, the Yankees have been pretty formidable throughout the regular season. You at all surprised that they've made it all the way to the World Series?
Look, I know we're going to talk about it a little bit more in detail, but I do think having the large payroll that teams like the Yankees and the Dodgers have make a difference. And the reason isn't so much the lineup you have on opening day, but it's the ability to make changes as the season goes along. You have injuries, you can afford to go out and get a player or two or three or four pieces and not worry about the money piece, right? You can allow teams to do salary dumps, rent a player, and get yourself over the top. And I do think it's difference-making for both these clubs.
Well, we'll talk about that a little bit later. Before we get into proper postseason chat, let's just focus on the really sad news from, I think it was yesterday, the passing of Fernando Valles. He was my age, he's 63. I think he was diagnosed with liver cancer, went into hospital on October the 1st and died 3 weeks later. As a Dodger, because this man was an amazing baseball player when he was playing for the LA Dodgers. I mean, you must be gutted, mate.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in Los Angeles. I was, from the age of 10 to 15, he was a monolith. He was talismanic in terms of what he meant to baseball, not just in Los Angeles with Fernando Mania. He sort of bridged that divide between Mexican Americans. He was Mexican, brought in those fans who were really big, but gave them something to be proud of. But for baseball in general, he was such a wonderful figure, just so positive, so upbeat, and so amazing and dominating. I think right before him, pitchers like Mark Fidrich, who was the Bird with Detroit, and then later on with Doc Gooden in New York. These are sort of these players that were so iconic that they brought people into the game who might not have loved it. And we think back that it's been a long time since we've seen the Yankees and the Dodgers play in a World Series together. They played so many World Series against each other in the 50s and the 60s. But the last time they played was 1981. And in that World Series, Fernando was amazing. He threw game three, threw 140 pitches in that game, was just such an absolute bulldog. Wonderful pitcher, wonderful ambassador for baseball. Very heartbroken as a person from Los Angeles and a person who, you know, there are always those athletes from your childhood, I'm sure you have them too, who really remind you of your love of sport. Yeah. Fernando was one of those for me.
Makes you feel your mortality, doesn't it? I mean, looking at his career, 10 amazing years with the Dodgers, but then on to the Angels, the Orioles, the Phillies, the Padres, the Cards, where he finished up in 97, six-time All-Star, two-time World Series champion. The sad thing for me, and particularly for somebody, and I keep calling you a Dodger, you're not, obviously, but you were brought up in LA. The sad thing for me is I understand his relationship with the team wasn't a great one post-playing career. What was that all about?
Yeah, I mean, there were definitely some tensions. I think one of the sad tragedies of his career was that Tommy Lasorda, who was the famed manager of the Dodgers during his tenure, really overused him. I mean, we talk about this era where pitchers can't throw over 100 pitches. he was constantly throwing 130, 140 pitches, and he threw a pitch that was particularly taxing on his elbow, the screwball. He had one of the best screwballs in baseball.
Yeah.
And so it really definitely physically hurt him. And then the Dodgers basically let him go. And that was really tough for him to handle because he was a Dodger through and through. Yeah. In the end, he did come back to the organization. I think that there was a reconciliation, which was nice. But really, I mean, you think of certain players who represent organizations, and Fernando Valenzuela and the Dodgers go hand in hand, even if he had played for other teams in the latter part of his career.
100%. Rest in peace. Very sad news indeed. Right. Let's focus on more upbeat news. I want to reminisce, first of all, buddy. The World Series is around the corner. I want to reminisce about our first ever World Series. And what a World Series it was. Angels v. the Giants, the rally monkey, wearing our tuxes. What's your fondest memory of that first ever World Series on Channel 5?
So my favorite part of that, Goldie, I don't know if you're remembering, we're giving away a secret, but we thought that the series was over. And I believe the Giants were winning by a certain amount of runs before Scott Spezio. And they had the rally monkey comeback for the Angels. And we did crack open a couple of beers. I remember, we thought we were done, and we had a couple of beers while the game was going on. I think
unheard of, because we were such professionals.
Exactly, because normally it would just be lots of candy, but we did have a couple of beers, and then all of a sudden the game turned, and we had to like focus in. And the pros that we were, we got away with it. But I remember those deconstructed days. We were definitely, in our best dress for certainly game one. Those World Series, that one, and I know the one you did with the Subway Series before I was there, ones you did with David. The World Series on that show, on the Five show, was just such a special time. It was always so much excitement, so much enthusiasm, both from the people who watched it, and I know for us and the people who worked on the show.
Do you know, buddy, the one tribute that I can pay that perhaps I've never mentioned, and I want to tell you and I want to tell our listeners, is how much did that whole postseason, particularly World Series, when we're in the tuxes, is everything, what did it mean to me personally as someone who did 12 of them, 12 years on Channel 5? 2006, you remember, horrific year when I lost my dad. And he'd been diagnosed with cancer in late July. And he went from this 6'3", strapping, gentle giant, wonderful man, healthy as, appeared to be as healthy as anything. And he was diagnosed with cancer of the esophagus. And if you remember, he went downhill so rapidly that he'd die 3 months later. And I had to do, I volunteered to do the eulogy, probably without a shadow of a doubt, the most important speech I've ever given in my life. It's a really stressful time because I wanted to nail it and everything else. And I remember Eric and you guys, you were so unbelievably loving, just saying, Goldie. And the funeral was on, I can't remember which specific day, but it was on one of the World Series days of 2006. And you were all going, mate, do not come to work. You do not have to do this. And I said to Eric, I said, buddy, I love you for the fact that you want to give me the night off because you think I need it. What I need is to be there. I need to be with you guys. I need to be talking baseball because my heart is broken. And the only place that I could think of that I could get through that night with a smile on my face was in the company of my baseball brothers, broadcasting to the great listeners of Channel 5. That is the greatest tribute that I can pay to you, buddy, to Eric, to Dave, to all the team at Channel 5, and in particular, to the incredible viewers of Channel 5 Baseball.
I mean, that's such a moving story, Goldie. And what I remember about that, too, is you were still such a pro. I mean, that was what was so crazy about it, is that you were going through all that personal turmoil, the heartbreak. But, whenever you got in front of the camera, you showed up. It's like a pro athlete, right? There have been so many instances of that, right, where you come out and play when you have so much of a heavy heart and you find a way to, like, bring your A game.
I appreciate that, buddy. I really appreciate. No one's ever described me as a professional athlete, so I'm blown away by that.
Like a professional athlete, not a professional athlete. Don't worry about that.
Okay. Obviously, we've got the great traditions of Channel 5 baseball coverage in the postseason. Particularly love the fact that we used to put on the black tie for Game One of the World Series, which even got a reference, if you remember, stateside. I mean, somebody wrote in and told the boys. Rick Sutcliffe gave us a shout out.
We, of course, we would grade the national anthem. That was definitely a huge part of it as well, too. Yeah. And then I was on site for a number of them. I know when I was in law school and you and Dave were doing the show, I would go on site. What I love about that is Eric would send me out. I'd be all on my own, doing all the work, pulling people aside. horse trading to get interviews. I remember that someone needed some interview that I'd had with Albert Pujols.
Yeah.
And so we agreed to allow that whoever that broadcaster was to use that in return for me getting an interview with Johnny Damon. You know, so like there was that negotiation. So I had to do all that. As soon as I come back to do the studio show with you, Eric was gone. He was like, I'm going with Dave and we're going to have a jolly out at the World Series. I'm like, whoa, you were never there for me. Dave's doing it. You're like, now my friend is doing it. So I'm out.
Buddy, no, you're seeing this wrong. He completely trusted you as being capable of sorting it. He had no faith in Dave. That was the problem. He knew Dave needed babysitting. That's why he was out there. It wasn't just a free trip for Eric. It was all about making sure that we nailed it. And that was more important.
It was a free trip and like grading hot dogs. That was what it was all about. Hot dogs and nachos.
Oh, that sounds amazing. Amazing memories. Right, let's focus, obviously, on this season. Just quickly looking back on the season, I think I'm right in saying none of us predicted a Dodgers-Yankees World Series, which isn't that surprising given how many years it was since it last happened. They've been together 11 times, is my understanding, but this is the first time, am I right in saying, since 81?
Yeah, first time since 81. I actually was at the 1978 World Series as a young boy. I was 7 years old, and I saw, at the time, was a very famous event in World Series history. Bob Welch, who ended up having a pretty good major league career, came out of the bullpen. He was a young rookie coming out of the bullpen to face Reggie Jackson, Mr. October, in a very tight situation. And Bob Welch struck out Reggie Jackson. It was a huge moment. I just remember being so young, but like, you know, the energy at the stadium, at Dodger Stadium, was crazy. Yeah. So it was a great World Series. So yeah, 78 and 81, Dodgers won in 81, Yankees won in 78. You know, they've been a really well-matched team. And you talk about, you know, the fact we didn't pick this series. I think a lot of people would have expected the Dodgers to make it, but not the Yankees. And what was interesting is that the way we thought of the two divisions, we thought the American League East was going to be just a, you know, a complete and utter, you know, gauntlet of difficulty for a team like the Yankees, because every team in that division could compete. And Baltimore had a great year, no doubt about it. But that division was nowhere near as intense as the National League West, right?
Yeah.
Where you had the Dodgers, you had the Padres, you had the D-backs. I mean, that was a tough, tough division. And the Dodgers ran that gauntlet and been impressive.
But you talk about how competitive that was. I think I'm right in saying, and I'm checking this now, the Padres had a 93-win season, which is the same as the Brewers, who obviously won the National League Central, is better than the Astros, who won the American League West, and was better than the Guardians, who won the American League Central. So, you know, how competitive. I mean, a side that went through on the wild card could easily have won half the divisions with the record that they had. And the D-backs weren't that far behind. They had an 89-win season as well. And I know they missed out on the postseason, but only on the personal matchups with the Braves and the Mets. So you're absolutely right. That was the division. Were you surprised to see the Orioles fall away? Because, I mean, they were at top of the table for quite a while. And then it just seems that the length of the season, 6 months, and the Yankees chased them down. I was a bit surprised and a bit disappointed. I really thought the Orioles were the team that were going to go all the way this season.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think that their regular season performance suggested that they could make a deep run. But, you know, their core is quite young, right?
Yeah.
You know, Rutschman.
So they will be back.
Yeah, they will be back, but also that's reflective of perhaps this is, you know, their first foray really truly in being a contending team. And when you're young, it's a little harder to do so. I think what was most interesting about the season, besides, of course, the White Sox having a record poor performance, was that there was no team that really dominated, right? There was no 100-win team this season.
Yeah.
Right. There was a lot of really solid parity in baseball this year, which made for exciting moments for the sport. And so I hope that continues. I mean, again, the regular season and the postseason are just two very different beasts. And, you know, you need to get on that hot run. You need to figure out ways to have success. I think a manager who doesn't get a lot of credit is Dave Roberts. I think that, you know, year in, year out, people sort of roll their eyes at the fact that they have so much talent with the Dodgers. But he has figured out a way, even in seasons like this year, where he's had bullpen starts after bullpen starts, figured out a way to manage that bullpen and really hit it just right, deserves a lot of credit.
Yeah, 100%. I'm not going to ask you to talk about this because obviously I'm biased, but I just want to tip my hat. I think the Braves making the postseason, given what they suffered, given they lost the best pitcher in baseball, literally as the season started, they lost the best hitter in baseball within 3-4 weeks of the season starting. They lost their third baseman, who has been an all-star the previous season, for half the season. Ozzy was out for, I think it was 2 months. Michael Harris was out for 2-3 months. These superstars, they had so many injuries and yet still made the postseason. I was so proud of the boys. I didn't expect us to go far. Unfortunately, we came up against the hottest team in baseball at the time, the Padres, obviously in the first round of the postseason. So it didn't surprise me that we lost out there. What I do want to point out is this incredible, what seems to become a regular thing every single year. A team like the Phillies, when they got a run going and they made the postseason via the wild card, they were seriously dangerous. This season, they were comfortable winners of the division and were leading for quite a while by quite a margin. And what happened in the postseason? They looked half the team they've been in previous years when it got to the postseason, like they've gone off the boil because they were too far out in front. So all credit to the Dodgers and the Yankees, the top of the pile, getting byes, and yet took that form and that ability through to the postseason to make the World Series. I tip my hat to both of them. And I'll be honest with you, buddy, not a lot of people are excited about this matchup because they consider them the two evil empires because of the money. I can't disagree more. You know, when you look at the superstars they've got in the lineup, I can't wait. You know, you've got a healthy Stanton. You've got Judge healthy. You know, you've got Shohei. You've got Freddie Freeman. I'm really excited about this matchup.
Yeah, I think offensively, there are a lot of really interesting names. I think on the flip side, the pitching leaves a little bit to be desired. Yeah. I know you have Garrett Cole, who's not really been healthy this year, but you don't have like Tarek Skrubal. You don't have some of like the really great, you know, overpowering superstar pitchers, which I think often brings a lot of energy to postseason games, creates that even greater tension. But yeah, the Dodgers bullpen, I know they've had three bullpen games. They've had one great one, one pretty good one, one not so good one. But that's going to happen in this World Series again too. But you're going to have to see a guy like Carlos Rondon or Jack Flaherty on the other side kind of emerge and really have one of those special games, I think, because of the offensive firepower you're talking about. You don't have the pitchers who are necessarily as big stars as the hitters in these two lineups.
Who do you feel has the advantage from a pitching perspective? We both know they have amazing hitting lineups and they're relatively healthy. Therefore, we can expect runs to be scored. So to me, it's going to come down to who can perform on the mound. You've got an amazing closer in Luke Weaver for the Yankees, who I've absolutely loved watching. But then Blake Treinen's not exactly shabby for LA. But I'm just wondering from a starting perspective, Carlos Rodon, obviously, for the Yankees. He's had the most strikeouts in the postseason. Who do you think's got the edge right now?
Yeah, I mean, I actually think the Dodgers do, despite the fact that they've had injuries and despite the fact that they're going with these bullpen games, because I really like their bullpen. You know, you mentioned Blake Treinen, who's fantastic, but then you have Michael Kopech as well in that bullpen, who was, you know, a dominant pitcher for the, you know, had since he came over from the White Sox. So you got those guys and really the middle relief pieces have been really good for that team. And I think that they're going to rise and fall on that, but I kind of like that bullpen a little bit more. If the Dodgers' offense can be as lucky is not the right word, but, you know, sort of be as opportunistic as they've been. You know, I mean, Kike Hernandez, Tommy Edman, right? These guys aren't superstars. They have been guys who have made a big difference in this lineup so far. If those guys can continue to be on a roll, then the Dodgers have the advantage. Now, if they have had their moment in the sun and have a kind of more muted World Series, the Yankees offense, I think, can overcome the Dodgers pitching. So I think that's really the matchup, right? Whether those sort of piece players that we often see in World Series and postseason that have really helped elevate the Dodgers can continue that role, then they're going to be in a great place.
Okay, let's talk about the individual aspects of this World Series. Shohei obviously has done everything that any baseball superstar can be expected to do in his career up to date, except win a World Series. This is his first chance. He's made the right decision clearly to move from the Angels to the Dodgers. Could he be the difference maker when you consider how incredibly impressive the Yankees hitting lineup is?
The most insane stat that I've seen recently is Ohtani's performance with runners in scoring position. He's hitting like 800 or something like that over
It's amazing,
the
isn't it?
postseason. So he has been, you know, the anoraks who say, oh, there's no such thing as clutch. I disagree with that. I think there are certain players who do rise and focus better in those situations. So give him those opportunities, great. I think Freddie Freeman's health is a really big question, right? He's had the ankle injury. He hasn't really been able to play. He's gotten this break. Whether he can play or not is a big deal. And the fact that Ohtani is in that DH spot, that costs them, right? Because Freeman's either going to play first base or not play.
Yeah.
So, you know, really watch that closely. But, you know, on the other side, you have Giancarlo Stanton, you have Aaron Judge. Soto's had success, but like those two guys are so hungry for a ring as well too. So you have players who are really champing at the bit for this, and I think that that's going to elevate the enjoyment and excitement of the series.
I love the fact that they've gone back to home field advantage being to the team with the best regular season record. And obviously these were the two teams with the two best regular season record, but that's why we're starting in LA, because the Dodgers had a better record than that. Are you in agreement? Is that something that you're in favor of?
100%. I mean, I think that anything short of that made no sense. I think that there needed to be some additional value. I know that the powers that be in Major League Baseball were holding their collective breath over whether a team that got a bye in that first round was going to eventually make it, right? Because we've been seeing so many wild card teams who get on a roll, they win that first series, that wild card series, and then just roll all the way to the World Series. Yeah. So I think they're kind of happy that they've been vindicated. The Yankees and the Dodgers are in that World Series. But I think that added value of the best record getting something is very valid.
Yeah. One thing we talked about slightly earlier on, but you didn't really go into detail, and I do want to touch on it before we finish, is the whole concept of the payroll. Because obviously we've been so used, when we were doing Channel 5 Baseball, the Yankees, I think, were spending $50 million a year more than anyone else. They were way out in front. And just slowly but surely, the Dodgers ate away at that lead, and now they are significantly above the Yankee payroll. So this is 1 and 2. So is winning baseball, is it a bit like F1? If you've got the most money and the best car, you win?
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned this before, and I think it's partially obviously being able to, you know, splash the cash on Ohtani or Soto. But I really do believe it's about being able to pivot late in the season. That if you have money, you can. Tommy Edman hadn't played all season.
Yeah.
They were able to basically get him for a song and a dance.
And he was great in the championship series.
Yeah, and he's the MVP of the championship series. Kopech has been a key part of that bullpen. And they really didn't have to give up. They gave up a couple minor leaguers in a three-way trade to make both those players come over. So, you know, that's the real advantage, which is being able to fill the holes, to create the spackle, if you will. You know, the spackle that you put in the walls to fill in those holes.
Yeah.
That's the advantage of big money. And I feel like both these teams have had that advantage. And I don't know how to solve for that. But it's a heartbreaking when, you know, you see a team like the Guardians or a team like the Royals that you really want to root for, right? Because they're low money teams and they're finding out a way to get into the postseason, and you want to see those underdogs make it, but it's hard to compete against the big money.
But I love the whole luxury tax idea. I think it's what they should do in rugby with the issues we've got with money. You know, there's certain teams with owners, you know, the Bristol Bears have got an owner who's worth $1 billion. The Bath owner, Bruce Gregg's worth about $350 million. And the Saris owner or former owner, Nigel Ray, is the same. You know, if they overspend their budget that they're allowed, I have no problem with that, as long as they've then got to give money as a tax to all the lower teams so that they can actually be more competitive. I think it's a great idea.
There are two issues with that, right? One is, are they using the money? You know, teams like the Oakland A's, you know, they were just pocketing that money rather than really reinvesting it, and B, does it really create a more level competitive playing field? Are those teams who have, you know, Steve Cohen's worth multiple billions of dollars, to him hitting the luxury tax is fine. It doesn't really hurt you to do so. Is it really helping parity in the sport? And I think that's a question.
Okay. Buddy, sadly, we're running out of time. As always, an absolute pleasure to speak with you. Before we go, though, we've got to have a prediction. I mentioned to you previously when we were WhatsApping about getting together tonight that I was doing my research ahead of this World Series. And from my understanding, they've played each other 11 times. The Yankees won, I think it was, the first five. So that's why it's distorted 8-3 in the Yankees' favor over 11 meetups. But in their last six meetups, it's three apiece. So it's much more competitive and equal. But what was really fascinating was of 11 World Series matchups between the Dodgers and the Yankees, on only three of those 11, was it either not 4-2 or 4-3. It always seems to go to the wire. What's your thoughts? What's your prediction? Who's going to win? And how many games is it going to take?
Well, first off, the last time they played each other in a World Series was 43 years ago. So to be able to extrapolate from that is a bit of a stretch. That said, I do think these teams are evenly matched. I think the Dodgers are going to win it in six. That's what I'm going with.
You're going for the Dodgers in six? No, that's exactly what I'm going for, JC. That okay. guarantees
so,
it can't
so
win.
It's guaranteed to be a failure, yeah. So bet accordingly and against Johnny and Josh.
Yes, and bet what you can afford. Don't forget yes. that as well. Oh, buddy, what are you going to be doing in terms of watching it? Where are you going to be watching it? Are you going to be able to watch it live? What's your plans?
Yeah, I'll be firmly ensconced in my couch looking at my television. I have the advantage that most of our listeners don't have, which is that I can watch it at a reasonable hour. So I'll probably do so, at least some of the games for sure, unless it conflicts with my curling. And then we have a big TV in the warm room, and in between making my little throws of my rocks, I'll go and look at the screen.
Buddy, is it still as exciting? Do people have World Series parties like they used to? I mean, what's happening in America in terms of the reaction to the World Series, particularly when they continue to move the dates from game one? They've sort of been playing with that for a number of years. Is it still as popular as it once was?
Yeah, I mean, the short answer is no, obviously. It's not what it was in the 50s, 60s, 70s. The sporting landscape has been diluted. It's not like the Super Bowl. You made the point, and it's true, that outside of LA and New York, that most fan bases are a little shoulder shrugging. But in those two places, I promise you, there will be a ton of energy. And I promise you that if you watch those games, they will be enjoyable because the fan support from both of those fan bases are so electric. So when you watch those games, it's going to be absolutely through the roof.
Fantastic. Well, buddy, we're definitely going to do anything in our power to have a sort of season wrap up. Hopefully make sure we put both Dave and Eric as well for that. But I just want to thank you, mate. I know you've made a real effort to join me tonight. You're an absolute superstar. Fingers crossed, Dodgers in six.
We'll see.
You're a legend, buddy. You're a legend.
All right, right
to everybody. Thanks, buddy. And to everyone else, thank you for watching. This has been the Johnny and Josh postseason podcast. We will do everything in our power to have a season roundup, and we'll let you know that on the usual social media things. Don't forget, with the bottom of the page, by the way, there's buttons you need to press and thumbs you need to have, and you know what to do. We loved it. Thanks for joining us. Till next time, for Johnny and Josh.